which will be discussed in the governing council tomorrow, calling for opposition to a U.S. attack on Iran. Bob will say more about that. As many of you see people with governing council badges on, I tell them please to vote in favor of the policy statement opposing an attack on Iran.
Thank you, Vic. Our first speaker is Susanna Serkin. She is the Deputy Director of Physicians for Human Rights, which has been a leader in the anti-personnel landmine movement and was a co-recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize for its work on the efforts to ban landmines and the Ottawa Treaty of 1997. Susanna.
Thank you. Hi. It's really great to be here, just about 10 years away from that momentous occasion 10 years ago. I thought I'd give everybody just sort of a quick overview on the anti-personnel landmines campaign. How many of you in the room actually sort of remember the early days of the campaign or the signing of the treaty 10 years ago? We're around focusing on that. Okay. How many were still in high school or college and really didn't pay that much attention to it then? Okay, so for you especially, I'm going to give you this overview. Landmines in the ground, there are still, it is believed, 80 million anti-personnel landmines in the ground on all, just about every continent. And we still are recording 15 to 20,000 casualties annually. That boils down to often more than 40 a day. This is on average, of course. You have times when it goes up and it goes down, so it's really not every day. But you could think about it because these numbers are sometimes mind-numbing at about 2 per hour. Today, the highest casualties are in Colombia, Cambodia, still from the conflict there, and some that are still being used in various skirmishes that are occurring there among different parties that have not completely laid down their arms, and Afghanistan, again, with ongoing a war there, but also from 20 years back, and of course Iraq. The couple of years ago, it was documented that more than half of the new mine injuries are occurring in areas where conflict has ceased, and that is one of the most horrific aspects of landmines, because they stay in the ground and continue to maim and kill long after the war is over. They cause egregious injury, as we'll see, really worse than most other injuries in armed conflict that war surgeons have to deal with. But not only that, because of the extreme disability that those who survive blasts are often left with, there's a disruption of the individual and family economy, the community economy, and even national economies as a result of these kinds of injuries. This is a minefield. This is a picture we showed many times at the beginning of the campaign to ban landmines 15 years ago because it looks so innocuous. And that is the other thing that is so terrible about landmines is that you look at this beautiful setting and it is a killing field. We call them weapons of mass destruction in slow motion at the height of the campaign. I'm just going to go quickly through so you can see, many mines are set by tripwires like this, and many of them are just tiny, look like toys. You can hold them in your hand. They're cheap. And during the height of the time that we opposed this weapon, they were the largest small arms weapon on sale, and markets on every continent, and many major countries were producers, leading producers, including Italy, many Eastern European countries, Soviet Union at the time, etc. Just to give a quick example, this is a survivor in Cambodia. So many of the victims are children. Most of them are civilians. Half of those who step on a landmine die as a result of the explosion. Landmines also pose a horrific burden on usually overburdened and underdeveloped health systems because most of the mine injuries occur in the poorest countries in the world. More children die of their injuries because they're closer to the ground and therefore closer to the blast. and the kinds of damage that are caused include everything from injury to the face and chest and extremities, as well as usually amputation as a result of gangrenous infection. And blinding is also common, and in the last decade there's been more research on blindness as well as deafness that result from these injuries. One of the most tragic stories we documented during the course of the campaign more than 10 years ago was one like this, where this woman was going to save her cow who had stepped on a mine, lost her leg in trying to save the cow, who then died. And when our researchers found this family, the little girl, their daughter, was tied to a tree. So mines actually imprisoned whole families. And of course, in the return of people to their homes in refugee repatriation, as in this case in Somalia, or in the height of fighting, landmine rates, as in the one on the in march here on the left, rise. So we issued this call for the ban, and this is historic at this point. 1991, before the campaign launched, and it's important for health professionals to know that really health professionals have led in this effort from the beginning, because they are often the first ones to see the consequences of mines, and that continues to this day. And as a result of the egregiousness of the weapon, called for the ban. Moving along here, the international campaign at its height, and it still exists, was over almost 2,000 organizations, non-governmental organizations of every type, disarmament, humanitarian, religious, development, demining, etc. And 10 years ago, this historic moment when the world, many nations of the world came together to absolutely ban the weapon. There are going to be celebrations next month, and also serious conversations about what we have yet to do, which is what I want to talk about. But I just want to mention that Jody Williams, who's pictured in that previous picture on the left, who was the co-recipient of the Nobel Prizes, as a result of winning the Nobel Prize with the campaign 10 years ago, had launched the Nobel Women's Initiative. And in reference to what Vic Seidel started out with talking about Iran this afternoon, Jody herself is working with Shirin Ebadi, Nobel laureate from Iran, to oppose invasion of Iran and or other violent ways to resolve the tensions between Iran and other countries. So I just want to acknowledge the spin-offs from the ICBL that are relevant to the purpose of today's talk. So moving along, we had the Nobel ceremony 10 years ago. And this is now going to what's happening today. The treaty is one of the most widely ratified disarmament treaties ever. The pace was extraordinary. You see here the ratifications up almost now to 160 with signatories, the pink line, and ratifications, the blue line, meaning ratifications mean the full commitment, so that a government is bound by treaty to ban this weapon, are now almost matching, which is really quite extraordinary. I can go on here. Unfortunately, the United States has not joined this treaty. But what's interesting is that effectively the fact that so many nations of the world, well, three-quarters of the nations of the world, have banned the weapon means that the United States essentially is complying with the treaty, because it really has become taboo to use anti-personnel landmines for most of the world. And this also applies to some degree to Russia and China, who are also non-signatories. So the smaller countries of the world have made a weapon taboo, even though the major powers have not joined the treaty. Okay. Unfortunately, the U.S. does support what they call smart mines, which means, the U.S. Military considers mines that self-destruct in a shorter period of time, and therefore the U.S. has argued that they're less indiscriminate. The campaign has vigorously opposed that analysis, and this is a continuing discussion that to some fair degree has halted after 9/11, when it's been very difficult to discuss these sorts of issues with the Pentagon. But interestingly, the global trade in landmines really has virtually halted as a result of this treaty and the landmine ban effort. This is what Kofi Annan said in 2006. And the landmine campaign is the treaty banning landmines is extraordinary in that not only does it ban the production and sale and export of the weapon, but it also requires governments to destroy their stockpiles as well as to provide funding for rehabilitation and demining. It's really an unusual disarmament treaty in these obligations that governments are being held to. And so we have seen over 40 million stockpiled mines destroyed and literally tens of thousands, painstakingly, of square kilometers of mine-infested land cleared, which is really a life-saving effort and dangerous and labor-intensive. And of course, the treaty also obligates governments, and as well as not only governments that have mine victims, but also the wealthy countries of the world that, by and large, don't have too many landmine incidents, to pay and support rehabilitation. And so hundreds of millions of dollars have gone to rehabilitation of survivors as a result, a direct result of the landmine treaty signed 10 years ago. Okay. And of course, the disability that results from landmines is huge, and it does pose a big burden on individual and community economies. There are over 400,000 survivors who require care and need this kind of help. The another thing that's happened in the last decade since the signing and ratification of this treaty by many nations is an deeper understanding of the long-term consequences that are not physical but are really emotional. And of course, disability carries with it stigma and discrimination and shame in many societies where losing a limb or being less than in some cultures are considered whole, it really casts them out. And so we're dealing with that. There's a very important working group that emerged, that exists today as a result of the campaign, that works on victim assistance, providing training for emergencies, ensuring that local health facilities meet minimum standards, developing community-based support, training workers locally so that people can apply the right kinds of prosthetics that will work in a particular culture or society. Some of the high-tech things that we use here in the States are just not workable or repairable in developing countries. And really out of the landmines campaign now, we have seen a whole global movement way beyond the landmines issue on disability rights, physical disability rights, in countries where there have been no rights for those who are physically disabled. So that's another spin-off of this incredible campaign, I think. So currently, we have Landmine Monitor. If you want to see the update globally, the campaign still produces this extraordinary huge book that Human Rights Watch organizes. And you can look up a Google Landmine Monitor. You'll see this and have access to it. Every few years, there's a review of states' parties' commitments to the treaty. The Landmines campaign is present at all of these and holds governments accountable for their commitments. There's effort now to look at non-governmental entities that are using anti-personnel mines, rebel groups, and so forth. That's a concern. And of course, we continue to press for those holdout governments to join the treaty. Finally, we have the issue of cluster munitions. And there's another session at this conference on cluster munitions, but the Landmines campaign has now expanded its mandate to include a call for a ban on cluster munitions, which act like landmines in many circumstances and pose the same kind of risk. We saw the use of clusters in the recent war between Israel and Lebanon, and this was a horrific set of injuries that were documented and are still being documented. I just want to close with sort of the role of health professionals in efforts like the campaign to ban landmines. They're the first witnesses to the incidents, as I mentioned. They've been credited with repairing what is irreparable, and that is really a crucial role of health professionals, including public health professionals, in this effort. But health professionals have also been uniquely effective in alerting policymakers to the injuries and suffering caused by these indiscriminate weapons. And right now, there is an effort going on in the United States. The Leahy bill was introduced last year. It needs to be reintroduced again, calling for a legislative freeze on the production, both of anti-personnel mines, but also of other victim-activated weapons, which would include cluster munitions and other munitions that act just like landmines. So I urge you to follow that and support those efforts so that we can have a mine-free world and a world free of weapons that act indiscriminately long after wars have ceased.